Welcome to Safety School, where we crunch down health, safety and environment learning into simple, bite-sized snippets that you can use for your business, helping you improve your knowledge, boost your performance, and maybe even providing some inspiration. Let's get started. Hi, thanks for joining me for another episode of Safety School. I'm Richard Collins, your host, and we are going to expand today on a theme that we discussed, which is a basic topic around health and safety, and that is looking at hazards. Today, I'm going to discuss 10 ways that you can identify hazards in your workplace. Just to give you a few ideas, sometimes when we go hazard spotting and we're thinking about ways of identifying risk, we sort of come up against a blank and hit a wall in terms of how to actually go about it. So expanding on what we discussed in an earlier podcast around what a hazard was, I did introduce some ways that you can actually start looking at relevant items in your business. We're just going to expand on that and rattle through 10 ways that you can do it in more depth. Before we get stuck into the podcast, I just wanted to quickly mention that if you're looking to learn the ropes on risk assessment, then don't forget to check out our complete beginner's guide resource, which is absolutely free to access, and a link to it on the podcast page. Also, if you, your team, or your employees need more formal, structured risk assessment training, then we've now released our own online risk assessment course, which if you'd like to take a look at it, you can also find a link on the course page to that, and it will allow you to check out a module for free so you can decide if it fits with your needs. And most importantly, every student that does enroll into the online course will be entitled to a one-to-one virtual follow-up session with myself personally. Yes, you did hear that correctly. Each student that does enroll in the course will be entitled to a one-on-one with myself, because really, when it comes down to it, our minimum goal for our students is to make sure that the learning outcomes of the course are achieved with no excuses. As ever, we really appreciate your support. Now let's get back to the podcast.
First of all, very obvious one, just walk around, go into your workplace, identify activities, processes, substances and so on that can actually cause injury or ill health to your employees. You know, that's a useful starting point. Get out there, get your hands dirty, so to speak, and that'll give you a good idea of, you know, the scope and how much detail you're going to need to get into, depending on how well you know your workplace already. You will have to bear in mind that you're only really taking a snapshot at a certain point in time, so you may miss things that aren't happening on an ongoing basis. So make sure to have a good rummage around, look in places that aren't so obvious. People have a very good knack of putting equipment that maybe isn't used that often in places where you can't see it, and even stuff that shouldn't be used as well. So just bear that in mind. Give yourself enough time to look in the places that are normally blind to you. Okay, secondly then is simply observation of work activities. And this is something that does take some time depending on what you're doing. You will want to make sure that you're watching a full cycle of work depending on what you're doing, or multiple cycles of work if you're wanting to look at different people doing the same task, for example, because that can be really useful to see the variations in how the work is actually performed and undertaken. And then from that, you can use it to help you identify any hazards that might exist in the way either it's meant to be done or the way it is being done. So thirdly, part and parcel of the observation process should be, and it's absolutely essential, to speak to your employees. So get engaged with your employees, ask them to explain after you've observed how they do their work, why they're actually doing it the way they're doing it, what sort of other things they're being asked to do, whether they have enough support and resources as they're doing their work, and whether they actually think or feel as if there's any danger to them as they're carrying it out, and do they have any concerns around the way things are being asked to be done, or is there any difficulty in trying to do it the way that it's being asked. Other than that, you may want to probe a little bit around the sort of physicality of a job if it is something that, you know, includes a lot of manual handling and ergonomic stress. So ask them, you know, are they feeling any discomfort? Have they experienced any ill health or injury from actually carrying out the work that maybe hasn't been reported or isn't obvious? Sometimes people feel that something is relatively insignificant and don't report it. However, after, you know, a significant amount of time, this may end up being turning into a chronic injury or illness, which obviously you'll want to know about and take action upon. Number four then, going back to our accident records, which is an easy way to look at existing problems and things that have caused injury or illness in your business, which should give you an insight into things that hopefully have been improved, but it will also highlight areas of high risk and there may be still opportunity for improvement. And it's worth casting your eye across these areas and the related activities or tasks that have caused the issues, just to see and make sure that you're happy with the outcomes of any investigations and any improvements that have taken place. It's a good sort of way to follow up and make sure that whatever processes you have in place for improvement are actually working. Number five then, leading on from accident records, is to take a good look at your sickness absence records and to see if you can use any information within them to identify some risks that may not be so obvious that aren't being controlled adequately. For example, have there been any absences that your employees have attributed to ill health that's been caused as a result of the work environment or the work conditions that they're operating in? And this may relate to things, organizational factors such as inadequate supervision or training. They may be stressed because of workloads. There may be issues around interpersonal relationships with management and so on. So there's a lot of factors and red flags that you can identify from looking at the information around your absence records, and then you can reverse engineer that to the actual root of the problem. So something that's very important to take a look at. Number six then, our inclination is to speak to our front of line operators and people working in the normal shift patterns. But something to be aware of is that there's a lot of useful information to be found when speaking to contractors and maintenance staff that particularly work out of normal hours, because there's a lot of unseen activity and sometimes it's not as well controlled as you would like it to be. And often it's higher risk activities that are being carried out when the factory isn't operating or the construction site is at a lower level of operations. So that's something to be very aware of. Make sure that whoever is responsible for managing those staff is well coordinated and communicated with, as well as actually you can engage with the people on the ground for some feedback. So that's sometimes an excellent way that you can identify risk that would otherwise be off your radar. On to number six then, and one that any HSE professional will be very aware of, is just looking at the manufacturer's guidance and instruction for use of any equipment, machinery or chemicals and substances that you'll be using. But it goes back to the legal premise for a lot of health and safety or environmental risk. You know, when it comes to responsibility of employers, a lot of it does boil back to making sure you're following manufacturer's instructions. And if you can't interpret these, make sure to get someone competent to interpret them for you. And as long as you are aligned to that guidance and doing everything that they're asking of you, then for the vast majority of circumstances, you will be in a good place. But just make sure to take into account anything else that's happening on your site whilst you're taking into consideration, you know, the guidance from manufacturers, and make sure there's no conflict or impacts, knock-on effects from each of the activities that you're doing. Number eight then is just looking at your operational procedures, method statements, work instructions and that type of thing, to give you an insight into how work is being managed and workers are being asked to undertake an activity. This is of course a pretty obvious one, but sometimes we get a little bit too comfortable in the fact that a work instruction or a method statement actually exists. But then when we take a good look at it, we actually find out that the way the work is managed or planned is really insufficient, or, you know, presents a lot of issues in itself. So that's something to be aware of, to get proactive on, and certainly get help from those that are more familiar with the activities or tasks to help you as well. Number nine, second last bit of guidance here on our top 10 tips for identifying hazards, and that is just looking at your local industry or regulator guidance. Depending on where you are, there may be lots of useful information. Here in the UK, we have the Health and Safety Executive, They have a really excellent and comprehensive website, albeit their guidance is all in written form. But obviously, you know, you can take that information, interpret it, and communicate it to your staff as and when necessary, and it will bring you up to speed and let you know about the legal stance on a lot of issues that may be relative to your particular sector or work. So along with the manufacturer's guidance, do use your local regulator's website. The HSE is great as a checking mechanism and with the information they have to make sure you're aligned with the legal expectations and the industry standards. And if they don't have the information themselves, they're usually pretty good at pointing you in the right direction. And lastly, tying all this in together is to just take a good overview of your existing servicing and maintenance for your buildings and your equipment to make sure that anything that you're doing currently is relevant and sufficient for managing hazards on your site. You may, after doing your walk around and speaking to people, identify items and things and they relate back when you look at your HSE or local regulatory guidance, as we were discussing, or again, your manufacturer's guidance. You may find that when you tie it all together, there are quite a few gaps between the industry expectation when it comes to servicing and maintenance of whichever equipment is relevant and what you're actually doing currently. And obviously you'll want to try and close that gap to make sure that you're falling into line with industry standards and legal obligations as well. Hopefully when you put all these tactics together, it builds up a real nice picture for you and will help you prioritize and develop an improvement plan to reduce risk in your business. That's it for this episode of Safety School. We hope this was helpful. If so, please remember to rate, review and subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, Google Podcasts or Spotify. And remember, for more health, safety and environment help, you can visit us at safety.com. Until next time, take care.